Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. You're listening to KER Politics, featuring Jim McKinney and me, Al Corlin. How's everybody today? I hope you have a great weekend. I know I'm looking forward to it. We are getting some absolutely killer weather here in the Northwest. Blue skies, high temperatures that a lot of people are uncomfortable with. I happen to like them quite a bit, actually. You know, I in an editorial that Jimmy and I did yesterday, I asked anybody of the radio who's listening to the show on the radio as opposed to as a podcast who's living in the South, how exactly is the environment, the climate environment in the South? It's pretty hot up here. I'm just wondering how it is in terms of some of the states that the carry our show. Got a big one in Florida, Louisiana, and then on up the Atlantic coast. Be curious to know how you guys are doing. Anyhow, Jim has very effectively divided the show up into the four segments, and we're going to talk in the first segment about Facebook files and the Biden administration censorship. Jimmy, what's going on? Are they basically putting Facebook in their back pocket?
Well, they were. And yeah. Of course, they were not willing to come forward with that. And I just wanted to highlight for the rest of the show, we're going to talk about this Facebook issue. We've definitely got to talk in the second segment about Hunter Biden and the plea deal falling apart this week. That was a disaster for the Department of Justice. We're going to talk what we talked a little bit on yesterday on a daily editorial. We're going to talk about Russian demographics and some things that are happening with Russia with regards to the war, but overall their long-term economic impact of those demographics, which I think is a very interesting topic for people to consider, certainly for the Russian people and the long-term stability of their nation. And then we're going to talk about the, you know, Mitch McConnell freezing up. And then, of course, a lot of the other senior political leaders in our Congress right now that are basically no longer functioning mentally. And so I think those are all, I think, good topics as we go through the day, through the rest of the show. But to get back to the Facebook file. So what happened over the last couple of weeks is the House Oversight Weaponization of Government Committee, chaired by Jim Jordan, had demanded that Facebook provide information, that Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook provide information on contact with the U.S. government over censorship, and that specifically with Biden administration officials. They had not wanted to do it, and they were hesitating. So Jim Jordan finally had put out publicly, made the public statement, and of course made official overtures that he would hold Mark Zuckerberg in contempt of Congress. And with that threat, the Facebook individuals began, they began releasing documentation. And that documentation is absolutely damning, showing how the Biden administration were attacking specific things that were related to COVID and other issues to have Facebook censor them. Even true, good questions to be asked by the population on the effectiveness of the vaccines and, of course, you know, the actual threats from COVID, they were censoring that to include just joking memes and even, you know, Tucker Carlson episodes when he was still with Fox News.
Now, according to Pew Research, Jim, you're saying that the liberals love the censorship. Actually, the number, according to Pew Research, according to your research, has shown that 70% of the Democrats absolutely love the censorship that is associated with Facebook. Why is that, in your opinion?
There has been a complete flip of the Democratic Party, right, in standing up for free speech. Yeah. You know, in the 60s and 70s, their big argument and, you know, liberal argument was, in fact, we demand free speech because the government was controlling speech and the right-wing conservative, you know, control was keeping people from getting facts on Vietnam and facts on corruption in the Nixon White House. So we have a flip now where the Democratic Party, and not just the Democratic Party, it's a lot of people these days do not want to hear opposing opinions, and they certainly don't want to hear facts that might contradict their political beliefs. And of course, this poll that I'm talking about, or that you were just talking about, that I mentioned, was a Pew Research poll. Jonathan Turley did a phenomenal. Jonathan Turley, very famous George Washington University constitutional professor and lawyer, he wrote a very interesting article talking about the number of Democrats and moderate to left independents that support silencing misinformation on the web. And what we're seeing now, though, with this information, like with Facebook and the COVID, the entire, you know, COVID effort by the U.S. government to force people or to encourage, if not force people, to take the vaccinations. They required all federal workers to take it, all federal contractors to take it. Any company, almost demanded every company with over 100 employees take the vaccinations. We're finding out these things are, they were not effective. There are significant risks. They weren't safe. And, oh, by the way, they never stopped the spread. So, and we're seeing significant problems with post-vaccination medical issues, including myocarditis and other heart, you know, problems,
right,
at some significant levels, with studies that are coming out now, very damning studies showing that these were dangerous. But the government was directly involved in silencing legitimate scientific research, as well as just regular people's comments on this through Facebook, certainly through Twitter. We know that because of the Twitter files and Elon Musk releasing with Matt Taibbi and other journalists, all that information. And of course, we haven't seen what they did with Google, YouTube, Instagram, and of course the network news connections. But what we do know is they went bent over backwards to intimidate and threaten and anger through angry messaging to Facebook and say, hey, you need to get these things off. And Facebook initially was hesitant in some cases because they said they don't break any of our rules. And of course, but they had to appease the Biden administration because of the threat of, you know, upsetting them and bringing, again, law enforcement or some other, you know, political retribution against these companies. And that's exactly the problem that you have in tyrannical governments that begin to silence the opposition. And unfortunately, a whole lot of people now have been brainwashed to think that this information, misinformation, is somehow dangerous to our, you know, our dialogue in America.
Yeah. Well, it is misinformation. I mean, censorship and misinformation is very, very detrimental to our dialogue. There's no question about that. That's the reason it's got to stop.
But what's misinformation? Who decides what's disinformation? Does the government? This is the big question now. Should the government decide which is wrong or right? What we're seeing right now is factual evidence that what the government was saying was true was in fact false. So who's the biggest misinformation presenter out there? And
well,
who's controlling the information?
Obviously the government.
Yes, and then all the news media that is basically broken down and succumbed to the pressures from the Democratic leadership. This is incredibly dangerous. They are the ones that are presenting the misinformation. Now, you know, you can't make a decision on if who decides what's true and what's false is basically which argument stands up the best. By silencing the argument, you'll never get it. I know we've got to go to a break.
Jim, you got to take a break here for a quick commercial. We'll be right back and talk a little bit about Hunter Biden's plea deal. Stick around. Just give us a couple seconds. And we'll get right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back to KER Politics. In the second segment, which is relatively short, We're going to talk about the Hunter Biden plea deal that was all over the papers last week. And that included, as Jimmy came up with in his research, that included a major disaster on the part of the Department of Justice. Hunter Biden is getting so many sweet deals, it is making me sick to my stomach. Why don't we just take him out of the equation totally? You know why? I can tell you why. Because there's a chance that the President of the United States, his father, is also profiting from some of the alleged deals he's been involved in. Jimmy, can you give us some light on that subject?
Sure. I think it's pretty important to go over what happened this last week on, I believe it was on Wednesday, when Hunter Biden went in to accept his plea deal with the Department of Justice over, you know, basically two misdemeanor tax violations and then kind of a diversion program to axe the gun, felony gun charge for being a drug addict, holding a gun, or buying a weapon and lying on his document for that, which actually carries a 10-year jail sentence. And there are people that for the tax crimes and the gun crime are in prison right now for years.
Right.
Some very famous people are actually, you know, there's a couple that was a reality TV show. They're in jail right now for tax violations for quite a few years. If you remember Martha Stewart for insider training.
You bet.
But this was going to basically, this deal was going to go ahead and just let Hunter Biden off with misdemeanor charges and then, of course, this post-trial diversion program to get him off the gun charge. And what happened was very interesting. So the DOJ came in with the plea deal. Hunter Biden pleads guilty and says, yeah, I did it, I did that, and, you know, basically admits to a lot of the facts. And then the judge asks the prosecutors, the, you know, David Weiss, the federal prosecutor that was responsible for this, hey, does this cover some other charges, like potentially a FARA violation where he could face penalties in the future? And of course, they were a little bit stunned a little bit and said, well, no, it won't cover that. And then she looks over at the defense attorney and says, hey, did you know that? And they're like, hey, then the deal's off. And then the Justice Department says the deal's off. And the judge says, okay, well, let's go back, come back in, I think, an hour, and let's discuss it further. And what ends up happening is Hunter Biden comes back, realizes that they were caught in a trap, that the Department of Justice was trying to hide this post-trial diversion program for the gun charge on the idea that it would be blanket immunity, that the judge realized something sneaky was going on behind the scenes. Hunter Biden's lawyers had assumed that that was a sweetheart deal in the background, but then they were caught publicly with that issue. The DOJ was caught publicly with that issue, saying, oh, yeah, you know, we would have to charge if something else like that came up. And the judge says, okay, yeah, this is a problem. And then, of course, Hunter Biden ended up pleading not guilty, changing his plea. And they're going to come back in, I believe, 30 days with some other sort of scam agreement. The problem is much bigger for the Biden family than just this issue. And the reason why is there are more and more documents coming forward from the Department of Treasury, significant activity reports from banks, transfer of funds to multiple entities within the Biden family, including a couple unknown, which would potentially be Joe Biden, from cash distributions for Hunter Biden's business dealings with foreign governments, including the Chinese, the Romanians, and of course the Burisma issues in the Ukraine. And a level of corruption here is becoming apparent. And as hard as the DOJ tried to kind of get through this and go beyond it, it looks like they're not going to be able to protect him. There's because of all the information and the factual information from the U.S. government that's coming out, including these latest IRS whistleblowers.
Yeah.
It's going to force more investigations. And it shows clear bias by the Department of Justice to try to protect Hunter Biden and the Biden family. But let me tell you, Al, there's something else that, in my view, is even more nefarious going on in the background.
And that is?
So almost immediately, the day after this entire thing blows up on Hunter Biden, what happens? Jack Smith, the special prosecutor that Merrick Garland put in charge of the Mar-a-Lago issues that has filed, you know, initially 37 charges against Donald Trump for mishandling classified information.
Right.
He filed 3 additional charges. And it looks to me like this was an immediate distraction effort to cover up what happened with the Bidens. Again, DOJ prosecutors playing the media game to distract what was happening with the Biden family very quickly. And you know what? It looks to me like a total, unbelievably corrupt Department of Justice in order to protect their favored people and basically the deep state in Washington, D.C.
Let's rephrase that. Let's put it like it really is. The favorite people, the president and his family.
Yeah, and I mean, if you understand how Washington works, and if you have some idea how these deals are made, and, you know, you think Joe Biden was a happy, nice guy that, you know, just an old guy that would restabilize, you know, and put dignity back in the White House.
Yeah.
You've been sorely wrong. And what it really has shown is that he's a vindictive man, that he's been involved in kind of pressure tactics. And, of course, that's how hard politics work. And certainly, you know, he's no stranger to it. And, of course, his family was used and Hunter Biden was using him and his power and his influence within Washington to go ahead and not only make a lot of money, but also to do things that actually damaged America. But now it's becoming incredibly damaging to the reputation of this nation.
Right. Well, fortunately.
Let me give you one other thing. I want to hit this real quick before because we got to go to break.
Right.
But the other thing that happened on Wednesday while the Hunter Biden trial was going on, there's this ridiculous whistleblower program on UFOs and UAPs saying that there were, you know, aliens. This is a distraction and a diversion in order to shift people away from what's happening, the more important issues out there and the facts. And some of the Republicans fell for it like idiots.
Right. Well, the thing that I think is even worse than the aliens, which I think is just, really a crock, are some of the other things that are coming out that are being used as diversions for this. You guys, Top of the Hour News is coming up next. Enjoy, 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 and we'll be back right away afterwards.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back to the second half of KER Politics. We're going to open up with Jimmy talking about demographics of Russia and the relationship of those demographics to the war. We talked a little bit about that this past week in a daily editorial, but Jimmy has got, I think, a lot more data in his back pocket right now. Things like, for example, 4 million people have left Russia since the war with Ukraine began, and that includes over 400,000 high-tech young people. War is killing the young, there's no question about that. And potential fathers that are prime family rearing age, I mean, it's really hurting that segment of the population. The war is not doing Russia really much of any good. Jimmy, can you elaborate?
Sure. I think, you know, this is we put it out in our weekly editorials, you know, just on a daily editorial this week, talked a little bit about it. And the thing to understand is the long-term implications for Russian economic and, demographic strength. They've been losing population since 1991, the dissolution of the Soviet Union. And of course, there was a lot of concern in 1991, 90, you know, in the mid-90s about the stability in the country. And so there was a very low birth rate. Now, the children that were born at that time, and there was a very, very problematic, very low birth rate at the time, those children are now in the not only draft age, but the father, you know, child rearing age, right? So they're, you know, in their 20s and 30s, early 30s. And what we're seeing factually, and this is from, you know, Rustat, these are basically Russian statistics, that there is a 1.5% or 1.5 child fertility rate, or, you know, fertility rate. Basically, they can't replace their population. And the country itself has gone from about 148 million to 144 million. It was a very steep decline about a decade ago. They were dropping very rapidly, about 900 to a million people a year. And then it began to go back up with some incentivization that they put in place with tax breaks and some other incentives to raise child rearing age. But they basically at this point cannot replace their population, and they're continuing to dwindle. But also a lot of people are emigrating, leaving the country, including these high tech workers. And a lot of it has to do with fear of being put involved in the war.
Well, you also have to wonder how much of that. I mean, of course, the war is a very large factor, but the high-tech workers in particular have to be a group of very well-educated, very bright people, and they really understand more about what's happening with the Ukrainian war situation. They understand much better, perhaps, than the general population, which is not nearly as valuable to the country as the younger people, but these younger people understand how really detrimental it is to the country. Jim brought up one thing that I want to stress, and that is that Russia can never get back to the, with the current statistics, Russia can never get back to the population they had before, because the birth rate is 1.5 million, 1.5%. And it's actually dropping. 1.5 is, that's a pretty low number, pretty low. How do you get a half a child, Jimmy?
Well, yeah, basically it's averages, right? So, yeah. You know, for every family that has two children, that's a replacement. But if you don't have three, you're not growing. And if you have 1.5 on average, then right. You're actually reducing population.
Of
and
course.
That's birth rate at 1.5 is actually a negative birth rate.
Yeah.
And here's another thing that's very important to understand right now, and an impact, direct impact of the war. And that is the Russians, you know, they attempted this last year to do a 300,000 man call up to support their army and to support operations in Ukraine. That did not go over very well. There was, in fact, because of that, you had a massive exodus of military fighting age men, and they left to border countries, former Soviet states, certainly the Baltics, and that's where a lot of these tech workers went because there's better opportunity there. And they were able to have, you know, they're able to move there through visas. Also Georgia and the stands, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and other places. Maybe not as much opportunity there, but certainly not the concern of being drafted and being forced into this call up. And what's happened is this week, the Kremlin has announced they raised the draft age from 27 to 30. So anyone from 18 to 30 years old as of January 1st, 2024 will be required to serve 1 year in the military. Now, Putin actually made an exemption from tech workers. He said, look, if you're a tech worker, if you're a high-tech worker, I will give you not only exempted from military service for this conscription. Remember, this is not a volunteer army like the United States has and many of the European countries. This is actually conscript army that carries the biggest weight in Russia. But not only will I give you, if you're a tech worker, a pass on being drafted, but I'll also, you don't have to pay federal taxes. And with that, they still did not have enough work tech workers to sustain or to keep them in country to basically deal with an evolving economy and a more technically required economy. Now, that's very problematic for the Russian military. And what we've seen both in the initial stages of the invasion of Ukraine was a large number of conscripts. And technically, they are not legally not able to leave Russian territory, according to the Russian law, to deploy overseas as a conscript. They'd have to be a professional, a volunteer, or some other case. But we saw a lot of them that were either captured or killed early in the stages of the war. And now there are quite a few conscripts now being captured again in the defense. So that's problematic, and it shows a level of concern within the Ministry of Defense, the Russian Ministry of Defense, of how to maintain their fighting force in this very ugly and disturbing war.
Well, there's another example of a great big blunder made by the leader of Russia, Vladimir Putin. I mean, that was, a lot of major mistakes that this road is going to lead Russia to consequences that are absolutely detrimental to the country. I mean, if I were of draft age in Russia, I would do everything that I possibly could to get the hell out of that country, because I think being drafted for an invasion of a country like Ukraine is not something to be ashamed of if you don't want to be a part of it. No question whatsoever about that. So if there's any way they can get out, they're going to do it. Do they want to die? Do they want to never see their families again because they were shot and killed on the battlefield of really an illegitimate action? There's only one way you can answer that question, Jimmy. And that's probably one of the reasons, as you brought out, that 4 million people have left Russia since the war began. And that's including over 400,000 high-tech young people. And of course, Putin is going to exempt them from the draft. I mean, why wouldn't he do that? Jimmy, we have about 50 seconds left. You got a final thing to say?
Yeah, I think that it's very important to understand that, look, this is just looking objectively at the problems Russia will face in the long term over this. Whether you support the war or not, Russia's going to face some very serious problems, economic and demographic problems, because of this war. Ukraine is certainly suffering from death and catastrophe and the destruction here. But again, Putin chose to attack and did not work his way through NATO. So, you know, there could have been other solutions. And again, I've never supported this war, but I do support self-defense.
Right, right. Jimmy and I will be right back, you guys, to wrap up the show discussing the fall of the elder statesman in the United States. Stick around. KER Politics right now, you guys are talking about some of the elder statesmen in our country who seem to be falling apart mentally. One is perhaps Mitch McConnell, who had a major problem this past week. Dianne Feinstein, of course, because of her age, she has slowed down. Joe Biden is very definitely slowed down. All you have to do is watch the videos of him getting on and off airplanes, and the videos of him attempting to engage in press conferences. You know, then we got John Fetterman. That's kind of an interesting example, because John is not as old as the ones that I have mentioned so far, but he just does not use what I would call good taste. Went down to the airport to meet President Biden as Biden was deplaning from a state visit, and there's Mr. Fetterman, Carlson Fetterman, I guess I should say. There he is wearing a workout outfit with shorts. Then we have Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Waters. You know, they, I have to say, for the Democrats, have probably been good representatives, but certainly not for the country. No question about that. not only my opinion, but a lot of people's opinion. Maxine Walters just can't control her temper, can't terminate spewing nothing but venom against white people. That's not the kind of person that we should have in a position of authority within the government. Jimmy, comments?
Yeah, so there's a problem with no term limits and the strength of incumbency when you have people like Mitch McConnell this week, the Republican Senate leader, freezing up for 32 seconds before he walked away from the podium, was helped away from the podium after being completely silent, basically nothing to say in a press conference in the congressional hall. It was really a stunning moment to say, to realize that a lot of these leaders that have been in for so long are basically incapacitated, incapable of functioning effectively, thinking clearly, or representing their constituents. This isn't about age, it's about competency and capability. When you're at that point in your life, maybe you ought to be thinking about sitting back and relaxing with the grandkids or retiring and give it over to someone else. But the power of the incumbency and the fact that we don't have term limits ensures that these people stay for as long as they can survive. And it's unfortunately, in my opinion, it is not good for the nation.
No, I agree 100%, Jimmy. It's not good for the nation whatsoever. Now, you look at that particularly who I respected over the years, and that was Mitch McConnell. You look at somebody like Dianne Feinstein. I don't agree with their politics at all. But, you know, I think she was probably pretty effective for her party. It's really sad to see those people, for lack of better terms, go down the tube. Not sad as a conservative, but sad as a human being. It makes me really, really unhappy. And I think John Fetterman, most conservatives just call him a joke, I have to say. I don't think, of course his actions make him to be a bit of a jester. But the fact of the matter is, it's not his fault. It's the fault of the Liberal Party who are keeping him in Congress right now. All he's doing is looking basically like what he is, an incompetent human being. Nancy Pelosi, Maxine Waters. Maxine Waters, I can't even watch when she is making a statement on television. She is so forth of venom, and you know, anger is no good for anybody, and it's really no good for a leader of the country, Jim.
No, and so Dianne Feinstein this week was in a hearing, and it was basically on the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, which, you know, the Senate approved by a large margin. There's only a handful of both Democrats and Republicans that didn't vote for it. It is different than the House NDAA. The House NDAA had included specifics that would take woke education policies, DEI policies out of Department of Defense, and transgender funding and abortion funding away from DOD for travel for people that wanted abortion on active duty. That was there's going to be a fight because of this thing. But Dianne Feinstein, in that meeting, she basically started reading a statement, and the people around her and the chair of the committee that was sitting there had to tell her, hey, just say yes, just say aye. And I mean, basically, that was just so embarrassing. And of course, she has not been in good health for a long period of time. Mitch McConnell has fallen numerous times. Joe Biden is, every time he gets on stage, he's an embarrassment. He is not capable of leading this nation or making positive, thoughtful decisions as the national leader. That's the most important position that you could have on this in the world right now. And the reason why we're in this complete like chaos is because the staffs of these people behind them are what's running the nation. There is no legitimate policy. There is no decision-making authority. There is no confidence in leadership. And you just watching it kind of deteriorate, watch our nation deteriorate so rapidly. And the fact that Democrats could actually vote in John Fetterman when he was absolutely incapable of being a senator shows you how much corruption there is in our political system right now, that it would allow, that would encourage voters to actually support a candidate like John Fetterman. And of course, I think the same example with the lying Joe Biden, who, you know, has been busted numerous times in his life for plagiarism, who is deeply involved in corruption, who has intimidated and has some very serious allegations of sexual misconduct that have never been satisfied. And of course, it doesn't matter because the system is so corrupt right now. The Democrats have so much power over information and media that we can't really, the American people just can't stop it. And unfortunately, we're on a serious decline because of it.
Well, that's been proven to a T, Jim, for lack of better terms. I mean, we're about to lose the reserve currency status as the world reserve currency. We're about to lose that. I personally feel, just by reading the headlines, that we are, among other things, at a tremendous loss of power as a world leader. I don't view the United States today as being a world leader, and a whole lot of the other countries, I think, would agree with that. It's so sad to see this this decay of the country that I grew up loving, and I still love its memory. But what's going on since Joe Biden came into power, I just feel so sorry for America, because it is not the country that it was. And you can prove that to anybody within about a 3 minute discussion, Jim.
Yeah, and there's been so many embarrassing, like really damaging events that have undermine any credibility. And, you know, we've got problems. Everyone's got problems. And, you know, I will say other nations have problems, significant ones as well. We're very introspective. We always attack our own country first. We're very critical of it.
Yeah.
But some of the decisions and some of the mistakes, you know, Afghanistan, absolutely just a disastrous mistake that did not need to happen. What's happening in Ukraine, a disastrous mistake that did not need to happen with the right leadership that preemptively stopped the war and a good negotiating stance to bring resolution to some of the questions the Russians had. The economy, the COVID, the issues, the forced vaccination requirements, the censorship issues, the the problem with just our infrastructure, the problem.
And let's talk about the huge rise in crime. In our cities. I mean, it's not just the major cities anymore. It's the major cities and the smaller cities. That, in my opinion, is the biggest black eye that Congress has to deal
Certainly
with right now.
Party.
No question about that. Jim, why don't you wrap it up? We got about 33 seconds.
Yeah, well, I think that we all ought to go ahead and think hard about what we think about the future, understand what's happening out there, be open-minded and absolutely critical, and make our voices heard. And I'd love to hear your comments on our blog, but come on back next week and listen to us here on KER Politics.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.